Homer's Iliad, Book 6. In this book, the gods have just left the battlefield, so the Greeks and the Trojans are left to fight on their own. The Greeks are killing a lot of Trojans. Hector goes back to Troy because he thinks it's a good idea to get the Trojans to pray to the gods to help them. Glaucus, who's one of the allies of the Trojans, comes up against Diomedes in battle, who's a Greek, and they decide that because their families are related and have ties of Xenia, that they shouldn't actually fight each other, so they just swap some armour instead. Hector, in Troy, goes to find Paris, sometimes called Alexandros, that he ought to go and fight. Then he goes to find his wife Andromache and his son Astyanax, before going back with Paris to fight. So, Book 6. So the grim battle of Trojans and Achaeans was left to them alone. And the fighting swayed many times this way and that over the plain, as they aimed their bronze-tipped spears at each other, between the streams of Simoeis and Xanthos. It was Aias, Telamon's son, bulwark of the Achaeans, who first broke the Trojan line and brought the light of triumph to his company, striking the man who was the best among the Thracians, Eusaurus's son, Acamas, the tall and brave. Casting first, he struck him on the ridge of his horse-plumed helmet, and the bronze point lodged in his forehead, driving in through the bone, and darkness covered over his eyes. Then Diomedes, master of the war cry, killed Axilos, son of Teuthras. He lived in well-founded Arisbe, a man rich in substance and hospitable to all men. His house was by the road, and he would entertain all who passed. But none of them faced Diomedes for him then, and saved him from a miserable death. But he took the life from both of them, Axilos and his lieutenant Calesios, his charioteer on that day, and both went down to the world below. Euryalus killed Drasos and Opheltios. Then he went in pursuit of Isippos and Pedasos, who were born by the water nymph Abarborei to the excellent Bucolion. Bucolion was a son of proud Laomedon, the oldest born, but his mother gave birth to him in secret. He lay with the nymph in love's union while shepherding his flocks, and she conceived and bore him twin sons. And these now had their strength and their body's brightness undone by the son of Mecisteus, and he set to stripping the armour from their shoulders. Astyalos was killed by the staunch fighter Polypoetes, and Odysseus killed Pidiotes, a man from Percote, with his bronze spear. And Teucros killed godlike Areteon. Ableros fell to the shining spear of Antilochos, Nestor's son. And Elatos to Agamemnon, lord of men. He lived in steep Pedasos by the banks of the lovely stream of Satnioisis. The hero, Laetos, caught Philakos as he ran from him, and Eurypylus cut down Melanthius. Then Menelaus, master of the war cry, took Adrestus alive. His pair of horses, bolting in panic across the plain, had tangled in the shoots of a tamarisk and broken off the curved chariot at the end of the pole. They ran on by themselves towards the city, where the others were fleeing terror-struck, and he was tumbled headlong from the car over the wheel into the dust, face down. And Menelaus, son of Atreus, stood over him, holding a long-shadowed spear. Then Adrestus took him by the knees and begged with him, "Take me alive, son of Atreus, and win a ransom of proper worth. My father is rich. There are many treasures stored in his house, bronze and gold and iron laboriously worked. My father would give you unlimited ransom from this store if he learnt that I was alive by the ships of the Achaeans. So he spoke, and began to have effect on Menelaus, his heart within him. And Menelaus was about to give him to his lieutenant to take back to the Achaeans' fast ships. But Agamemnon came running to face him, and loudly berated him. Menelaus, dear brother, why this concern for men's lives? Did you get the very best treatment from the Trojans in your house? Not one of them must escape stark destruction at our hands. Even the boys still carried in their mother's wombs, not even they must escape, but all be extinguished together, wiped from Ilios without sight or ceremony. With these words, the hero turned his brother's mind, winning him with right advice. Menelaus pushed the hero Adrestus away from him with his hand, and Lord Agamemnon stabbed him in the side. He collapsed on his back, and the son of Atreus braced his foot against his chest and pulled out the ash spear. Then Nestor called in a great shout to the Argives. My friends, Danaan heroes, Ares men-at-arms, let us have none of you now hanging back in desire for spoils, hoping to return to the ships with as much as you can carry. No, let us be killing men. Then afterwards you can have that too, and go over the plain stripping the bodies of the dead at your leisure. So speaking, he spurred the strength and heart in each of them. Then soon the Trojans would have fled back into Ilios, driven broken and spiritless before the Achaean warriors, if Helenus, Priam's son, and father best of augurs, had not come up beside Aeneas and Hector and said, Aeneas and Hector, it is on you too more than any of the Trojans and Lycians that the burden of battle falls, since in every venture you are the best at both fighting and planning. So make a stand here, go right through the army and rally the troops outside the gates before they run on home and throw themselves into the arms of their women folk and bring joy to our enemies. When you have spurred all the ranks to the fight, we will stand our ground here and do battle with the Danaans, for all our great exhaustion, necessity compels us. And you, Hector, make your way to the city, and then give instructions to your mother and mine, Hecabe. She should gather the old women and go with them to the temple of bright-eyed Athene on the city's height, open the doors of the holy dwelling with the key, and place a robe on the knees of the lovely-haired goddess Athene, choosing the finest and largest robe in her house, and the one that she herself delights in most. And she should promise to sacrifice 12 heifers in her temple, yearlings never touched by the goad, if she will take pity on our town and the Trojans' wives and their little children, so she may hold the son of Tydeus away from sacred Ilios, this savage spearman, this powerful creator of panic. I think him the greatest fighter of the Achaeans. Not even Achilleus, leader of men, ever struck such fear in us as this. And they say he is son of a goddess, but this man rages beyond measure, and no one can match his strength. So he spoke, and Hector did not fail to obey his brother. He immediately jumped down to the ground from his chariot with all his armour, and shaking a pair of sharp spears in his grip, he ranged all through the army, spurring them to fight and rousing their spirit for grim battle. They rallied and turned to stand against the Achaeans, and the Argives gave way and stopped their slaughter, thinking that one of the immortals had come down from the starry heaven to help the Trojans, so strong was their rally. Hector called with a great shout to the Trojans, "You high-hearted men of Troy, and you, our far-famed allies, be men, my friends, and fill your minds with fighting spirit. while I go to Ilios and tell the old men of the council and our own wives to pray to the gods and promise them full sacrifices." So speaking, Hector of the glinting helmet left them. And as he went, the dark leather of the rim that ran round the edge of his bossed shield kept tapping top and bottom at his ankles and his neck. Then Glaucus, son of Hippolochus, and Tydeus's son, that's Diomedes, came together into the ground between the two sides, eager for battle. When these two had advanced to close range, Diomedes, master of the war cry, was first to speak. "Which of mortal men are you, my friend? I've never seen you before in the battle where men win glory, though now you have shown yourself far superior to all others in your bravery to stand up to my long-shadowed spear. Misery comes to the parents of those who face my strength. But if you are one of the immortals come down from heaven, I would not want to fight against the heavenly gods. Even the son of Dryas, strong Lycurgus, even he lived no long life for clashing with the heavenly gods. He once chased the nurses of wild Dionysus down from the sacred mountain Nysa. They all scattered their holy ones on the ground under the blows of murdering Lycurgus's ox goad, and Dionysus, in terror, dived into the sea's swell, and Thetis took him to her breast, fearful and trembling hard at the man's threat. Then the gods who live at their ease were angry with Lycurgus, and the son of Cronos struck him blind, and he did not live long after that, hated as he was by all the immortal gods. I would not want either to fight with the blessed gods. But if you are a mortal, of those who eat the crop of plough and field, come closer now to meet your doomed end the sooner." Then Glaucus, Hippolochus's glorious son, replied, "Great-hearted son of Tydeus, Diomedes, why do you ask of my birth? The generation of men is just like that of leaves. The wind scatters one year's leaves on the ground, but the forest burgeons and puts out others as the season of spring comes round. So it is with men. One generation grows on and another is passing away. But if you do want to hear of it and learn the history of my family, it is something that many men know. There is a city, Ephyre, set in the corner of horse-rearing Argos. There lived Sisyphos, who was the most cunning of men, Sisyphos, son of Aeolus. He had a son, Glaucus, and Glaucus fathered the excellent Bellerophontes. The gods granted Bellerophontes beauty and all that is lovely in manhood. But Proetos intended him harm and drove him out of the land of the Argives. His was the greater power, since Zeus had subjected Bellerophontes under his kingship. Proetos's wife, godlike Antea, had become mad with desire to lie with him and make secret love. But the good Bellerophontes had a virtuous heart, and she could not seduce him. She then spoke lyingly to King Proetos. "Die yourself, Proetos, or kill Bellerophontes. He has tried to lie with me in love against my will." So she spoke, and anger took hold of the king at what he had heard. He shrank from killing him. Awe of that touched his heart, and he could not. But he sent him away to Lycia, and sent with him signs of disastrous meaning, many lethal marks that he wrote in a folded tablet, and told him to show them to his father-in-law to ensure his death. So Bellerophontes went on his way to Lycia under the gods' safe speeding. And when he reached Lycia and the stream of Xanthos, the king of broad Lycia honoured him with ready welcome, 9 days were given to hospitality, and 9 cows slaughtered in sacrifice. But when rosy-fingered Dawn appeared on the 10th day, then he began to question him, and asked to see the token that he brought with him from his son-in-law Proitos. Then, when his son-in-law's cruel token was in his hands, he first of all told Bellerophontes to kill the Chimaira, a creature none could conquer, born of gods, not of men. She was a lion in front, a snake behind, and a goat in the middle, and her fearful breath was a blast of blazing fire. He killed her, following signs from the gods. Then next he fought against the renowned Solymoi. This, he said, was the hardest battle with men that he ever entered. Then thirdly he slaughtered the Amazons, women the equal of men. And as he returned, the king set another cunning snare for him. He chose the best men from the breadth of Lycia and set them in ambush for him. But they made no return to their homes. All of them were killed by the excellent Bellerophontes. But when the king came to realise that he was a god's noble issue, he kept him there with him and offered his daughter in marriage and granted him half of all his royal honours. And the people of Lycia set aside the finest piece of land for him, rich in vineyard and ploughland, to be his own domain. And the king's daughter bore 3 children to the good Bellerophontes, Isandros and Hippolochos and Laodamia. Zeus, the counsellor, lay with Laodamia, and she gave birth to Sarpedon, the bronze-armoured warrior. But when even Bellerophontes became hated by all the gods, he went wandering alone over the Aleian plain, eating out his heart and avoiding the path of men. His son, Isandros, was killed by Ares, the war glutton, as he fought against the renowned Solymoi. And Laodamia was killed by Artemis in her anger, the goddess of the golden rains. But Hippolochos fathered me, Glaucus, and he is the man I spring from. He sent me to Troy and gave me constant instructions, always to be bravest and best, and excel over others, and not bring disgrace on the stock of my fathers, who were far the best men in Ephyre and in the breadth of Lycia. This is the family and blood I am proud to call mine. So Glaucus spoke, and Diomedes, master of the war cry, was overjoyed. He fixed his spear fast in the nourishing earth, then spoke with friendly warmth to the shepherd of the people. Well then, you are a guest friend of mine from far back in our families. Godlike Oeneus once entertained the excellent Bellerophontes in his house and kept him for 20 days, and they also gave each other fine gifts of friendship. Oeneus gave a belt brilliant with purple, and Bellerophontes a 2-handled cup of gold. I left it in my house when I came to the war. Tydeus I do not remember, because he left me when I was still small, when the army of the Achaeans was destroyed at Thebes. So now you have me as your loyal host in the heart of Argos, and I have you in Lycia, whenever I come to that country. Let us keep away from each other's spears, even in the thick of the fighting. There are many of the Trojans and their famous allies for me to kill, any of them that God sets in my way and my legs can catch. And again, many Achaeans for you to cut down, all those you can. And let us exchange armour with each other, so the others too can see that we are proud to claim guest friendship from our father's time. So they spoke to each other, and they jumped down from their chariots and took each other's hand and pledged their friendship. Then Zeus, son of Cronos, took Glaucus's wits away from him. He exchanged with Diomedes, son of Tydeus, gold armour for bronze, 100 oxen's worth for 9. Now, when Hector came to the Scaean gates and the oak tree, the wives and daughters of the Trojans came running to surround him, asking after their sons and brothers and kinsmen and husbands. He told each one of them to pray to the gods, but sorrow was there in store for many. Hector then came to the beautiful house of Priam, furnished with porticos of polished stone. In it there were 50 rooms of polished stone built close by each other. There Priam's sons slept beside the wives of their marriage. His daughter's rooms were facing on the opposite side within the courtyard, 12 roofed rooms of polished stone built close by each other. There Priam's sons-in-law slept beside their honoured wives. At the house, his generous mother met him, coming in with Laodike, the most beautiful of her daughters. Hecabe took his hand and spoke to him. "Child, why have you left the hard battle and come here? The sons of the Achaeans, a curse on their name, must be wearing you down with their fighting right up to the city, and your heart has moved you to come here and hold up your hands in prayer to Zeus from the city's height. But wait for me to bring you some honey-sweet wine, so that you can first pour a libation to Father Zeus and the other immortals, and then enjoy it yourself, if you will drink. When a man is tired, wine is a great restorer of strength, and you have tired yourself in the defence of your kinsmen." Then great Hector of the glinting helmet answered her, "Do not offer me cheering wine, dear mother, or you may sap the strength from my limbs and make me lose my courage for the fight. My hands are unwashed, and I am ashamed to pour out gleaming wine to Zeus like this. And no one can offer prayers to Zeus, the son of Cronos, lord of the dark clouds, all spattered with blood and filth. No, you must go to the temple of Athene, goddess of spoil. Bring offerings and gather the old women with you. And take a robe, the finest and largest in your house, and the one that you yourself delight in most, and place it on the knees of the lovely-haired goddess Athene, and promise to sacrifice 12 heifers in her temple, yearlings never touched by the goad, if she will take pity on our town and the Trojans' wives and their little children, if she will hold the son of Tydeus away from sacred Ilios, this savage spearman, this powerful creator of panic, Diomedes. So you go to the temple of Athene, goddess of spoil, and I will go after Paris to call him back, if he will listen to what I say. Oh, that the earth would gape under him where he stands. It was a great curse the Olympian was rearing when he let him grow. A curse to the Trojans and to great-hearted Priam and his children. If I could see that man dead and gone to Hades, I could say my heart had forgotten its misery." So he spoke, and his mother Hecabe went into the house and gave her instructions to the serving women, and they went through the city, gathering the old women. She herself went down into the sweet-smelling storeroom where her robes were kept, the intricate work of Sidonian women who had been brought from Sidon by godlike Alexandros, Paris himself, as he sailed over the breadth of the sea on that same voyage which carried back Helen, daughter of a noble house. Hecabe lifted out one of the robes and took it as a gift for Athene. It was the finest in its woven decoration, and the largest, gleaming like a star, and it lay beneath all the others. She then went on her way, and many old women flocked with her. When they came to the temple of Athene on the city's height, Theano opened the doors for them, the beautiful daughter of Cisseus and wife of Antenor the horse tamer. The Trojans had made her priestess of Athene. All the women lifted up their hands with wailing to Athene, and beautiful Theano took the robe and placed it on the knees of the lovely-haired goddess Athene, then spoke in prayer to the daughter of great Zeus. Lady Athene, guardian of our city, queen among goddesses, break now Diomedes' spear and grant that the man himself be brought down on his face in front of the Scaean gates, so that we may sacrifice here and now 12 heifers in your temple, yearlings never touched by the goad, if you will take pity on our town and the Trojans' wives and their little children. Such was her prayer, but Pallas Athene shook her head in refusal. Now, while the women were making their prayers to the daughter of great Zeus, Hector had gone to Alexandros' house, Paris' house, a beautiful house that he had built himself together with the men who at that time were the finest master builders in all the fertile land of Troy. And they had made him a bedroom and a hall and a courtyard, close to Priam and Hector on the city's height. Hector, loved of Zeus, entered the house, and in his hand he held a spear 11 cubits in length. The spear's bronze point gleamed before him, and a gold band ringed it round. He found Alexandros in the bedroom, that's Paris, fussing over his exquisite armour, the shield and the corselet, and handling his curved bow. And Argive Helen was sitting there among her servant women and supervising her maid's magnificent handcraft. When Hector saw him, he attacked him with shaming words. Strange man, this resentment you have conceived in your heart does you no honour. Our people are dying, fighting right by the city and its steep wall. And it's because of you that the clamour of battle is blazing round this city. You would quarrel with any other man you saw hanging back from the hateful fighting. Up then, or the city will soon be burning with fire to destroy it. Then godlike Alexandros, Paris, said to him, Hector, your charge is not unfair, and there is justice in it. So I will tell you the truth. And you mark what I say and listen to me. It is not so much anger or resentment at the Trojans that has kept me sitting in my room, but I wanted to give way to my distress. But just now my wife talked me round with gentle persuasion and urged me back to war, and I think that would be best myself. Victory switches from man to man. So come now, wait for me while I put on the armour of war. Or you go on and I shall follow. I think I shall catch you. So he spoke, and Hector of the glinting helmet made no answer. But Helen spoke softly to him. My brother, brother of the bitch, the scheming, horrible creature that I am, how I wish that on that first day when my mother bore me, some vile storm wind had taken me and whirled me up to the mountains or into the swell of the sounding sea, where the waves would have washed me away before all this could happen. But since the gods have decreed that these miseries must be so, then I wish I had been the wife of a better man than this, one who had sense for men's outrage and all the shaming things they say. But this one has no wits in his head now, and never will in the future, and I think he will meet the reward for that. But come now, come in, brother, and sit here on this chair, since it is your mind more than any that the war's work besets, all for the sake of the bitch that I am, and the blind folly of Alexandros, Paris. On us too, Zeus has set a doom of misery, so that in time to come we can be themes of song for men of future generations. Then great Hector of the glinting helmet answered her. "Do not ask me to sit, Helen, for all your kindness. You will not persuade me. My heart is eager now to bring help to the Trojans, who miss me greatly when I am away from them. But you can rouse this one, Paris, to action, and he should hurry himself too, so he can catch me while I'm still inside the city. I am going now to my own home to see my servants and my dear wife and baby son. I cannot know whether I shall ever return again and come back to them, or it is now that the gods bring me down at the hands of the Achaeans." So speaking, Hector of the glinting helmet left her. He went straight to his own pleasant house, but did not find white-armed Andromache at home. She had gone with her child Astyanax and a fine-dressed maid, and was standing on the tower in wailing and lamentation. When Hector found that his excellent wife was not at home, he went and stood in the doorway and said to his maids, "Come, maids, tell me truly, where has white-armed Andromache gone from the house? Has she gone to one of my sisters or my brother's fine-dressed wives, or to Athene's temple, where the other lovely-haired women of Troy are offering appeasement to the fearful goddess?" His busy housekeeper replied, "Hector, you ask me to tell you the truth. She has not gone to any of your sisters, or your brother's fine-dressed wives, nor to Athene's temple, where the other lovely-haired women of Troy are offering appeasement to the fearful goddess. But she has gone to the great tower of Ilios, because she had heard that the Trojans were failing and the Achaeans winning a great victory. So she has gone running to the wall like a woman in frenzy, and the nurse is with her, carrying the baby." This is what the housekeeper said. And Hector ran from his house back along the way he had come through the well-laid streets of Troy. When he had crossed the great city and reached the Scaean gates where he would make his way out onto the plain, there came running to meet him his dowered wife, Andromache, daughter of great-hearted Aetion. Aetion, who had lived under wooded Placos, in Thebe under Placos, ruling over his people, the Cilices. He it was whose daughter Andromache was wife to Hector of the bronze helmet. She then came up to him, and with her there went a maid, carrying at her breast their innocent child, no more than a baby, Hector's only beloved son, shining lovely as a star. Hector's name for him was Scamandrios, but the others called him Astyanax, lord of the city, because Hector was Ilios's sole protection. Hector looked at his son and smiled in silence. Andromache came close to him with her tears falling, and took his hand and spoke to him. "Poor dear man, your own brave spirit will destroy you, and you have no pity for your baby son and for me, your doomed wife, who will soon be your widow. Soon the Achaeans will mass an attack on you and kill you, and for me then, when I lose you, it would be better to sink down under the earth. There will be no other comfort left for me when you meet your fate, only misery. I have no father now, or honoured mother. My father was killed by godlike Achilleus when he sacked Thebe with its high gates, the Cilices' lovely town. Achilles killed Aetion, but did not strip him of his arms. Respect touched his heart, and he could not, but he burnt him with his crafted armour, and piled a barrow over him. Round it elms grow, planted there by the nymphs of the mountains, daughters of Zeus who holds the aegis. The seven brothers I had in my home, all of them went down to Hades on the same one day. All were killed by swift-footed, godlike Achilleus as they tended our shambling cattle and our white-fleeced sheep. As for my mother, who was queen under wooded Placos, Achilleus brought her here with all our other goods, but then released her for a countless ransom and she died in her father's house, struck down by Artemis, the archer goddess. But Hector, you are father and honoured mother and brother to me, as well as my strong husband. Please feel pity for us. Stay here on the battlements, so you do not make an orphan of your child and your wife a widow. Have the army take up position by the fig tree, where the city is most open to assault, and the wall can be scaled. 3 times their leading fighters have come and made an attempt there, under the 2 Iantes and the renowned Idomeneus, and under the sons of Atreus and the brave son of Tydeus, Diomedes. Either someone skilled in prophecies must have told them, or it may be their own hearts prompting. Then great Hector of the glinting helmet answered her, "Wife, all that you say is surely in my mind also. But I would feel terrible shame before the men of Troy and the women of Troy with their trailing dresses, if, like a coward, I skulk away from the fighting. Nor is that what my own heart urges, because I have learnt always to be brave and to fight in the forefront of the Trojans, winning great glory for my father and for myself. One thing I know well in my heart and in my mind. The day will come when sacred Ilios shall be destroyed, and Priam, and the people of Priam of the fine ash spear. But the pain I feel for the suffering to come is less for the people of Troy, less even for Hecabe and King Priam and my brothers, the many brave brothers who will fall in the dust at the hands of our enemies, than my pain for you, when one of the bronze-clad Achaeans carries you away in tears and takes away the day of your freedom, and you will live in Argos, weaving at the loom at another woman's command and carrying water from a foreign spring, from Messeis or Hyperea, much against your will, but compulsion will lie harsh upon you. And someone seeing you with your tears falling will say, 'This is the wife of Hector, who was always the best warrior of the horse-taming Trojans when they were fighting over Ilios.' That is what they will say, and for you there will be renewed misery, that you have lost such a husband to protect you from the day of slavery. But may I be dead and the heaped earth cover me before I hear your screams and the sound of you being dragged away.' So speaking, glorious Hector reached out to take his son, Astyanax. But the child shrank back, crying against the breast of his girdled nurse, terrified at the sight of his own father, frightened by the bronze and the crest of horsehair, as he saw it nodding dreadfully from the top of the helmet. His dear father and his honoured mother laughed aloud at this, and glorious Hector took the helmet straight from his head and laid it gleaming bright on the ground. Then he kissed his dear son and dandled him in his arms and said in prayer to Zeus and the other gods, 'Zeus and you other gods, grant that this my son may become, as I have been, preeminent among the Trojans, as strong and brave as I. And may he rule in strength over Ilios. And let people say, as he returns from the fighting, this man is better by far than his father. May he carry home the bloody spoils of the enemy he has killed and bring joy to his mother's heart.' So speaking, he placed his son in his dear wife's arms. She took him to her scented breast, smiling with tears in her eyes. Her husband saw the tears and was moved to pity. He stroked her with his hand and spoke to her, saying, 'Poor wife, please do not let your heart be too distressed. No man will send me down to Hades before my fated time. And fate, I tell you, is something no man is ever freed from, whether brave man or coward, from the first moment of his birth. No, go back to the house and see to your own work, the loom and the distaff, and tell your maids to set about their tasks. War will be the men's concern, all the men whose homeland is Ilios, and mine above all. So speaking, glorious Hector took up his helmet with the horsehair crest, and his dear wife went back towards their home, turning often as she went, the heavy tears falling. Soon she came to the pleasant house of Hector, the killer of men, and all the many servant women she found inside, she set to lamentation. So they mourned Hector while he still lived in his own house, because they thought he would never again return from the fighting and escape the fury of the Achaeans' hands. And Paris did not dally long in his high house, but once he had put on his glorious armour of intricate bronze, he dashed through the city, sure of the speed of his legs. As when some stalled horse who has fed full at the manger breaks his halter and gallops thudding across the plain, eager for his usual bathe in the lovely flow of a river, and glorying as he runs, he holds his head high, and the mane streams back along his shoulders, sure of his own magnificence. His legs carry him lightly to the haunts where the mares are at pasture. So Paris, son of Priam, came down from the height of Pergamos, bright in his armour like the beaming sun, and laughing as he came, his quick legs carrying him on. Then he soon came up with godlike Hector, his brother, just as he was about to turn from the spot where he talked with his wife. Godlike Alexandros, Paris, spoke first to him. "Brother, you are in a hurry, and I am sure I must have delayed you with my dawdling and not coming on time as you told me." Then Hector of the glinting helmet answered him, "Strange man, no one in all fairness could belittle your success in battle, as you are a brave fighter. But you deliberately hang back and refuse to fight, and my heart within me is pained at that, when I hear shaming things said of you by the Trojans, who have much hardship to endure on your account. Let us be going then. We will make all this good later, if ever Zeus grants that we may set up in our houses the feasting bowl of freedom, in thanks to the heavenly, ever-living gods, when we have driven the well-grieved Achaeans out of Troy."